Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Living Room Logic. Everyone, welcome back to yet another episode of Living Room Logic, your favorite science podcast. Of course, if you have another favorite, we will find you. So I'm here with Andrew, and we're gonna have a chat today about plastic, and specifically about how much of plastic pollution and plastic waste we make, and how it seems to always end up in the ocean. One way or another, that's just what happens. So Andrew's going to start us off with some information about how we make plastic and how much of it we make on land. And then I'll talk about how it gets into water.
Yeah, plastics are really cool. And they're really useful. We use them literally everywhere. Look around your room. There is plastic everywhere. And the positive side of plastic is that it is cheap. It is easy to build things with plastic. It is easy to build useful products with plastic. And since we have started pumping out plastic since the 1950s, we have gone through huge technical enhancements of getting complicated things to average people, because it makes things more good cost ratio for benefits, right?
Yeah.
It is. It makes these things approachable. Plastic's good in that point of view. The problem with plastics is that where there was this explosion of products and benefits to humanity and to the average person's quality of life, there was a massive explosion of people's quality of life and of plastics year on, year out. In 1950, we made 2 million tons of plastic. 1960, 8 million. 1970, 35 million. 1980, 70 million. 1990, 120 million. 2000, 213 million.
Oh my God.
2010, 313 million. And 2020, 380 million.
Wow.
That's not like in the decade. That's in those years.
Oh my God. That's like an annual rate. Holy crap.
So it's outrageous. So there has been a growth from 2 million to 380 million per year in the last 70 years. And this has been this has been a constant increase in all but 3 years. Okay. So in all but 3 years, and thankfully to these people who caused these 3 years of decreases, because the first one was the 1970s Richard Nixon recession, and then there was the 1980s recession, which caused a dip, and the 2008 crash, which caused another drop in the production of plastics. Why?
Oh,
because everyone was broke. However, you know, this reduced production of plastics probably also saved the climate some hassle, so good on them. The what's really, really important, like I was saying, 2 million, 8 million, up to 380 million per year, is that this accumulates. This accumulates, and how we manage this plastic has only really started to improve since about 2000, 1990, and to where we're currently at is still pretty crap. Honestly, it's still really, really bad. When I was looking at it, in the 2 million tons of plastic we made in 1950, 99.9% of it ended up in a landfill, because at that point we weren't even keeping the plastics that we were using. We were using them for little things that would get discarded.
Yeah.
Now, over the 40 years since, there is a proportion of the plastics that are made that are constant and that are being used a lot and being used well, but it's also the minority, and the vast, vast majority of plastics are not being used, and they need to be managed. So in 2015, 55% of plastic waste was discarded or put into a landfill, 20% was recycled, and 25% was incinerated. You're seeing there that 80% contributed to bad things.
Yeah.
Incinerating is better than a landfill because at least you're producing electricity, but it's also wrecking the climate. So, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And that was 2015. So as much as things aren't being done enough right now, it was much worse in 2000, where 75% of plastics that were being produced then ended up in a landfill.
Mm-hmm.
And we've reduced that 20% and we're trying to use it more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when you take all of this as accumulating, and we've accumulated something in and around 7 billion tons of plastic at this point, when you add every year together, about 4.6 billion has been discarded in total.
Wow. Billion.
4.6 billion has been discarded or put in a landfill. It really raises the question of where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
It's really raising the question of all of these things and of where this is coming from. And the by far the biggest production of plastic is in packaging, where packaging produces three times more plastic waste than any other area in industry. Just packaging.
Yeah.
Wrapping things up, moving things from A to B. It is the number one cause, three times worse than the next closest. And it's really important to note that this is not a balanced thing across the globe. This is a very first world problem, and it is very much so first world economies that are bringing in plastics and discarding them. This isn't a poor country problem. This is a poor countries are not buying as many things. They, as I said before, this is very much so a, if you're buying things with plastics wrapped on them and all of that, you're probably buying something to improve your quality of life, and nowhere is quality of life higher than in the first world.
Yeah.
But when you pull it all together, it means that there is a huge amount of waste in first world, and the way that we manage this waste in the first world has to be combated with significant means of getting in the way of it just being discarded, of just being put in a landfill, and we need to find better ways of recycling and reusing it, because we can't just burn it all. We have episodes last season on why we can't just do that, and we can't just let it seep into landfills. We can't let it just degrade into the ground, because it has much wider global impacts.
Such as? Yeah, one of the kind of scariest or things that scientists in particular are most scared about is the amount of plastic that goes into the ocean. Our surface is 70% water, and the volume of the earth in above, you know, the crust is pretty much water. The volume of that is immense. And as Andrew said, the amount of plastic that we produce has risen crazily to, I think it's every year now, we pump 150 million tons of plastic into the ocean, which is a significant amount of what you said that we produce.
It's crazy.
So this is a major problem. And maybe a point I wanted to say as well, you said that it was a kind of a first world problem. I would actually kind of add to that and say it's a first world and a developing nation problem. We've talked about this in our climate change episode as well. We talked about how developing nations have to get through a dirty industrial revolution.
Of course.
And when you produce loads of carbon emissions, you're also producing a load of plastic, probably, because it's by far the cheapest way to distribute your products, you said, via packaging. And as single-use plastics, which is kind of one of the biggest problems. And I'll talk about that a bit more later on. But the source, and the major source of all of this plastic, is actually through rivers. And it's kind of strange because most of the plastic pollution every year actually only comes out about 10 or 15 of the world's rivers.
No way.
So it's like there are clear sources that we could actually really focus all of our attention on.
Holy sh!
Now, mind
really?
You, one of them is, you know, the biggest Amazon River in Brazil.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, how do you, it's so huge that you couldn't possibly just put a big, huge net across it and stop all the plastic from going out. It's impossible.
Yeah, fair. Fair.
But there are certain companies that are focusing their efforts on collecting plastic from those river sources.
Yeah.
There's one called the Ocean Cleanup Project. And it's something that I would have studied a lot in college nearly, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago when they started out. And their CEO was this really young guy. He was like 18 or 19. His name is Bojan Slat. And he gave great TED Talks at the time. And everyone thought of him kind of the way people think of Greta Thunberg now, as like this, you know, young person who has a very old, wise soul and clearly knows that there's a problem that needs to be fixed. And, you know, love them or hate them, they know a lot about certain things. And Bojan Slat was talking about going out to a specific place called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is this massive area of the Pacific Ocean west of California. I forget the size of it. It is several million kilometers squared of plastic coverage. And so Bojan Slat wanted to clean it up in 30 years or something. That's he kind of threw out this pretty ambitious goal of cleaning up the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. And he made these autonomous machines that went out into the open Pacific waters, and there were these two really long, I think like half kilometer long arms on either side on the surface of the water, and it would just passively kind of move its way through the garbage patch. And in the middle there's this kind of conveyor belt system that slowly moves the garbage up into these receptacles that are then taken by boats and brought back to land and dealt with more reasonably. But they actually found that these autonomous systems weren't moving fast enough, and they actually were kind of a failure in one sense, in that they didn't work really. So they actually just rebooted and have updated their plan, and they have been for years. And now they're actually using these huge vessels, a boat on either side. And now they're just literally trawling with surface nets and just taking all the garbage out with two boats and a huge net in the middle. And they're just literally fishing out the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. And based on their progress so far, they'll get it done in like 10 years. And so you're talking like a significant portion of the plastic that's in the ocean. But as we said before, it really is the source that's the problem. Because meanwhile, while they're doing that, literally more plastic than what they're taking out is going in. So there's a complete imbalance there. We're inundated with the amount that's going into the ocean. So he came up with these devices called interceptors. And they are very similar to that autonomous vehicle that I was talking about, the central part of it that kind of, it's like a conveyor belt. It almost, if you look at it, it kind of looks like a fish's mouth, and there's just conveyor belts in the middle. And it's quite large, like it maybe 10, 20 meters long.
Yeah.
And they just put this kind of buoyant, kind of, you know, those squidgies that you get in the swimming pool. It's kind of like one of those that goes across the entire river face. And because plastic is buoyant, it floats to the top, hits that, and then moves its way into this conveyor belt's mouth. And then they have, like, you know, employees. There's a bunch of large bins in the vessel that the conveyor belts drop the garbage into the bins, and they're taken away and either recycled or disposed of in a landfill. So at least you're getting them out of the water and into a landfill. Those are in a few of those, you know, 15 worst perpetrators of plastic production in terms of people chucking the plastic in the water. But still, even with all of this action, it's like a tidal wave. And there's this other project called Team Seas that just happened, and it's actually two of the like biggest YouTubers. Mr. Beast is one of the biggest YouTubers in the world. And he teamed up with another YouTuber called Mark Rober. And he's a science communicator, and he used to work for NASA, and he does like physics stuff. I first saw this Team Seeds thing, and I was thinking really positively of it, because it's really cool. They want to take 30 million pounds American freedom units of garbage and put it in and take it out of the sea. And that company that I was talking about before, the Ocean Cleanup Project, that's one of their major charities that they're funding. Wow. And so they're funding them with $30 million and it's a donation scheme. So everyone online, you can give a dollar or you can give $100 to get how many pounds of trash you want out of the ocean. And I was very positive about this. And then I realized, how much is that? First of all, I don't work in those units. I work in kilograms and tons. Mm. And the amount of trash that they want to take out of the oceans in 3 years is equal to 0.01% of how much plastic that goes into the oceans every year.
No.
So, and I'm not trying to say that the project is yeah. I'm not trying to shade,
it's the right
shade
direction
on the project.
Yeah.
I think the point here, though, is that they never say that in the whole scheme. They never say that there is this ridiculous production of plastic into being chucked into the ocean. They're just being like, everyone, let's do something good and let's pick up a bag of trash from the ocean and put it in the bin. And then that's your job done. And you can go back to using your single-use coffee cups and your plastic straws and everything else. Probably what's worse is getting all your packages in really heavy duty plastic, and everything that's made ever has plastic on it or in it. Really, what people are talking about in terms of the Team Seas project in particular is we need to think about it from a much more systematic level. Mm-hmm. First of all, single-use plastics are probably the first thing that we can stop. And actually, a lot of first world nations are already miles ahead with this. I actually find it difficult to find a plastic coffee cup in Ireland.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. And also a plastic straw. I actually hate the plastic straws in McDonald's. I think they get too soggy too quick. But you know what?
Or the paper straws.
The paper straws. But you know what? They are so worth it. Yeah. But the interesting thing here is actually that we need to go further than that. And we need to go further than Team Seas.
Mm.
You give how much money you want to Mark Rober and Mr. Beast and these NGOs. I think it's a wonderful idea. But go further and say to yourself, what else can I do? And so definitely make sure you don't use single-use things. That's step number one, and that's actually the kind of easiest thing that we can do. But then we also need to think, and this goes right back to the climate change discussion that me and Andrew have had, that we need to give developing nations who are in the middle of their kind of dirty industrial revolutions right now, we need to give them alternatives to making really, really cheap, really economically sensible decisions to make very cheap plastic and to put their products in those.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer for them, and it makes perfect economic sense.
For sure.
So it's up to the world to make it uneconomical, or to make, more so than making that plastic uneconomical, come up with another material that we can make just as economical or close to it.
It's so close to what we were talking about in the climate change episode.
Definitely,
when we were talking about how the Industrial Revolution is what made the first world the first world and made them rich, and that how we are impeding developing nations when we tax the nonsense out of their output, their industrial making, and that how we need as a globe to acknowledge that and support those developing nations. But it's the same here. It's that the plastics in our life increase our quality of life significantly. And if we impose restrictions on plastics in developing nations, we need to support them accordingly.
Yeah.
Because it's also not reasonable to let their quality of life be any less than ours just because we're ahead of them.
Literally could be as simple as just giving them enough infrastructure to deal with the waste. It's because for instance, in India and in China, one of the rivers in China is the most heavily plastic polluted river in the world, and it produces 15, the Yangtze River produces 15% of all of the plastic that goes into the ocean. God. And it's like, it's only because the people, it's not like they're bad people. They have physically no other choice. They either pile up all the garbage in their house and be so unhygienic that they probably will get a disease and die from that level of disorder, or they put it in the river and it goes away.
Yeah.
It's the only solution for them. So we need to come up with ways to give people solutions for their plastic waste, because waste will stay in the environment for thousands of years. And when the plastics go into the environment, especially in the ocean, because of because they're buoyant, they stay on the surface and they actually get broken down by the sun's UV rays. But they just get into these smaller pieces and they become microscopic and they turn into this thing known as microplastics.
Yeah.
And if you look at, it's a very kind of popular research field right now, because if you look anywhere in the world, you will find microplastics. A friend of mine, a colleague of mine, she just did a study on deep sea fish, and she found 2,000 meters down in the deepest, darkest parts of the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, fish had plastic in their stomach.
That is nuts.
So, and so we actually don't really know the effects of this, because there's a lot of papers that say that certain types of plastics can be carcinogenic in high volumes. But then others, there's absolutely no information on them. Yeah. And a lot of them seem to not have an actual real effect on the body. They just kind of exist. But every single person in the world, except for people that literally don't use plastic, will have some type of chemical that came derived from a plastic in their system.
Yeah.
And that's insane. Like, apparently there's a PET... No, it's not PET. It's another type of plastic that I forget the name of. But it is present in your urine, because you drink from plastic bottles and you put your plastic container with chicken in it that's frozen. You put it in the microwave and some of that seeps into the chicken.
Oh my God.
There's kind of, we are so reliant on plastic. And I think the fact is that we just need to understand that it doesn't just go away, and that, you know, first world countries, we're getting there, but it's not really just our problem to sort our own countries out. We need to help developing nations. That's almost equally, if not more important than sorting our own stuff out, because if we don't do that, everything we do in our own countries, much like climate change and carbon emissions, will not really be for anything. So we can do both. We can do everything that we can do. You know, use reusable things and use biodegradable things. There's some amazing biodegradable products that are coming out now that you can use for everything, and they're actually starting to be used in all sorts of ways of life, and especially in packaging. So it's really kind of, it's really, the future is bright for that. And also knowing that we have these ways of stopping waste from going out into the sea from river sources.
Yeah.
These things are very promising. And there are ways to clean up the ocean from all the stuff that we've already put in there, because we're doing it right now. Buoyant Slat, that young kid, he's out there doing it.
There is a means to approach this. It's just about pushing it. Like always, it's like making awareness of this. And in reality, it is about voting for people who are aware of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's...
With the climate crisis, it is definitely something that you can bring forward to your government representatives. Yeah. Say, hey, what do you think about plastic? Do you think that we have a problem in our country? So,
and when they say no, point at this podcast and be like, well, Aiden said
Aiden and all his microplastic friends.
It's complicated, like all things related to waste and climate and everything like that. It's complicated, but again, it's so much better to be informed It's so much better to be informed than sometimes willfully but pleasantly ignorant to all of it. Mm-hmm. Like I spent most of my life before being part of these episodes.
Me too, buddy. Me too.
Yeah. All right. That was a good one. And I hope everyone enjoyed it. I hope everyone's a little bit more informed. So cheers, Aiden, for carrying that one through.
This is the end of the podcast. We hope you enjoyed your time. If you're feeling generous and you're not completely skinned, why don't you give us some of your money? Join our Patreon. Join our Patreon. Join our Patreon. Join our Patreon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.